Thanks, Dean. I'm Leslie, I'm an addict. And, it's a real privilege to be asked to share here. 40 minutes is quite a long time, so, you know, let's see how I go. Penny was talking about, area and some of the area announcements, and I'm a GSR, and I've been doing it for just over a year, and, you know, I've kind of found that my enthusiasm for the commitment has sort of waned a bit, but it's very interesting going to area because you find out what's happening in NA. And, we've just got a new H&I rep in Southwest London. And, and he said, I've done quite a bit of H&I. And if you're involved in H&I, you know how difficult it is to get into prisons these days. I was involved in a meeting at Bronzefield Prison and I did that for about 3 years, and then they changed the clearance process, and basically that shut down the meeting. I might say something more about that in a bit, but one of the things that came up at area was that in Wandsworth, guys are running their own meeting because there's no H&I in there. You know, that is astounding. That's absolutely astounding, and they're going to run run their own kind of mini convention in Wandsworth Prison. I mean, how fucking amazing is that? And I think, I started doing H&I in Brixton Prison a long time ago, before there were sort of guidelines about men in men's prisons and women in women's prisons. And actually what we used to do was go in with bags of sweets and loads of cigarettes, so it made the meeting very kind of attractive to people, we used to have this like cell at the end of a wing, and it used to get absolutely jam-packed, and I don't know what the guys got out of it, but the interesting thing was at that time, guys used to come to the meeting and they'd say, oh, you're a social worker, miss, and you go, no, I'm here from Narcotics Anonymous. Oh, what's that? People hadn't really heard of Narcotics Anonymous, and now you've got prisons where the guys are running their own meetings. NA is an amazing, amazing thing. It's made an amazing difference to my life and how I see it working in other people's lives. I just don't see any alternative if you've got a drug problem that gives you so much freedom in your life. I really, really don't. And, it's really transformed my life. And, there's apparently Heathrow Immigration Detention Centre that are asking for an NA meeting, which is a kind of a weird thing. I think that's a bit weird, really. But hearing that made me think that, maybe I'll try and get involved in H&I again. The bizarre thing about that was I got clearance at Bronzefield Prison. Two of us did. Out of everyone who was on it, a lot of people didn't want to fill it in because you had to put your employer and employer contact on it. No one wants a prison phoning up your work and going, oh, do you know so-and-so? They're coming in to run a meeting for drug addicts in Bronzefield Prison. Who wants that? Me and a friend of mine, I don't work anymore. So, well, actually, I do work, but I don't work in the job I was doing before, and I don't really care anymore. And so they gave me clearance. And the unbelievable thing was, I got clearance. I don't mean to be arsy about this, but I'm 32 years clean, and I went into. I got a call, and they said, "Oh yeah, you've got clearance, and come in." And we need to do a special risk assessment on you, because there is a risk with you coming in. And I was, what's the risk? Well, drugs, that's your risk. I'm wherever I was at the time, 61 or something, I'm 30 years clean. What do you think the risk is? And, and we had to kind of go through this ridiculous risk assessment. And I think, actually, your problem is probably the people who are working for you, taking drugs. It's not me. And I loved that meeting, it's the same for guys, I guess, but for women, end up in prison for really ridiculous things. I would say most of the women who were coming to the NA meeting had children, and their children were in care. And it's just, it's such a hammer for, you know, the sorts of things that they were in prison for, you know, to kind of, you know, I was arrested with my son about 6 months before I got clean, and you know, and we were in a police station, and luckily they let a friend come and take my son home, and to their house, and you know, and I thought I was going to get a prison sentence. I was incredibly lucky. I walked away from it, and you know, and I think a lot of things, when I look back on my life, I think, you know, I've been so incredibly lucky at different points in my life, you know, like overdosing and people turning up and finding me, and, you know, kind of getting away with things, really, getting away, you know, the fact that I got, the fact that I walked away from that. But for me, that was the wake-up call that really started my sort of journey into recovery, you know. Because about 4 or 5 years before that, I decided that I was going to clean up, really sort, I'm going to keep away from all the people I know, you know, I'm going to really straighten myself out. I didn't know anything about NA at the time. And I did a whole lot of things to try and sort my life out. And then, you know, it was like, however, 4 or 5 years later, suddenly I was in a police station with a habit, you know, with my son, with all this chaos around me. How did that happen? You know, I really couldn't understand how I'd had all these really good intentions to clean up, and then I'd ended back, you know, where I'd always been, and I just couldn't understand that. And so that was a real sort of wake-up call for me. And what I felt at the time, you know, was, you know, if I go back to that sort of life net, kind of karma, do you know what I mean? If I don't even know that I really knew what it meant, you know, but if I go back to that kind of life again, you know, I will lose everything. I've had a real, real piece of luck here. And I tried on my own to sort of sort myself out, and it was a disaster, really, you know. It was, I just found it impossible, you know, and I started drinking alcoholically. I'm a really, really bad drinker, you know. I'm over emotional. I do things that I feel really ashamed of. It was just horrible. And you know, one day I ended up in an NA meeting, and I used in a very, very pathetic way for about 6 months, you know, going to meetings, really, really barely using at all. You know, one day, I went to one meeting a week. That's what I did. I went to one meeting a week, and it was very attractive. I just found it very attractive, you know. People, there was one girl, and I can, you know, I can still, I don't know where she is. I don't see her now, but I can picture her face, and she used to sit in meetings and laugh all the time. And I used to look at her and think, you know, how attractive that is. You know, my life was kind of drama, and, you know, I've had it worse, you know, I've had it worse than anyone else. And you know, when I got clean, it was a lot of kind of, I got clean in Chelsea, you know, and at that time that was sort of where NA started in London, and there were a lot of sort of very middle class sort of kids, you know, and I was sort of 31 and I had this little kid, and you know, I kind of believed that they all knew each other, really, and they, after the meeting, they would all go off together and it would just be me and I go home on my own. You know, I had absolutely no idea, really, about friendships or anything like that. You know, when I look back, I think I was so ill-equipped to deal with life. I had so little understanding of, you know, of what life was. And anyway, I kept going, and I went to this one meeting a week, and, you know, I saw this girl and I thought, oh God, she's really great. And I'd go away and, you know, use pathetically. And then one day, this guy who I'd used with him about sort of 12, 13 years before I got into recovery. And he was a year clean. So he was, you know, practically a god, you know. And he said to me, you know, what meetings do you do? And I went, oh, well, I come to this meeting every week. And he said, you know, what? So what, you're doing 90 meetings in 90 weeks? And yeah, so I share this all the time at meetings, really. You know, but I don't know whether any, you know, whether it was that no one had said that or that I had just never heard it, you know. And once he said that, I started going to more meetings. And once I started going to more meetings, I kind of decided I'd pick up a white key ring and, you know, and give it a go. And that was in May 1986. And it's funny, I've got some friends and we've got like similar clean time. And we went out for, we go out for dinner after a meeting on Wednesday night, my home group. And someone had been in the meeting and they were talking about YouTube videos. And we were going, God, it's such a different sort of environment now. You know, you can watch YouTube videos and you can go online and download shares from this. I mean, it used to be CDs, didn't it? Yeah. You know, when I got clean, it was cassette tapes. And, you know, no mobile phones. You know, like a little meeting list that was, you know, it's just so different. You know, there's so many sort of resources. I don't even think there was a recovery text in the UK when I got clean. You know, it's so different and it's so amazing, you know, because I think I was really slow, you know. It took me a long time, you know. I'll probably share some stuff in a minute about, you know, that I feel slightly embarrassed about how slow I've been in recovery doing things. You know, one of the things I would say is my son, who was 9 when I got into recovery and had been dragged around all over the place, you know, he'd seen, you know, a lot of stuff that a kid shouldn't see. I hate to say this, you know, he's 42. He's probably older than a lot of you in this meeting. And he's got a little daughter, you know, my granddaughter. And they're very, very sort of principled. You know, his girlfriends are vegan and, you know, they won't take my granddaughter to zoos because animals shouldn't be, you know, all that kind of stuff. They're super, you know, super sort of principled. And they've moved in with us recently. And so now I get up extra early and I sit and watch Peter Rabbit or Octonauts or something like that and have breakfast with my granddaughter. And it's the most wonderful thing. You know, it really, really is a wonderful thing, you know, because I sort of screwed up in a lot of ways with my own son, you know, and having that opportunity again to be around this child is just, you know, amazing. What did she say today? She, when I got home today, she came up and sort of leant on the chair, she's 3 and a half, and she said, so how's your day been? You know, she's 3. I kind of don't know how you answer a 3-year-old saying stuff like that. So, you know, that is, that's been a really wonderful thing for me. Once I got clean, I had a sponsor before I got clean, although I lied to her, you know, I didn't tell her I was using until I got, you know, until I picked up a white keyring. And she used to say to me, oh, so when was the last time you used? And I used to go, oh, God, I don't remember, you know, but it was a little while ago, you know, which is so ridiculous, isn't it? I've always had a sponsor. There was a period when I was about 10 years clean when I didn't have a sponsor for a couple of years. And I, you know, personally, I find that hard. I find it hard having recovery without a sponsor, especially if you sponsor people, because it's like you don't have that flow through, you know. It's an energy, you know. Recovery is an energy, and, you know, and it needs to kind of flow. And then, I wonder how long ago that was. Maybe 5 years ago or so. I had a sponsor, and I've been with her for a long time. And she decided that she couldn't sponsor me any longer. And then that was difficult, you know. I had a couple of years where I didn't have a sponsor, and so much happened in all that bit of recovery. But anyway, this is what I'm talking about. I was learning Italian at the time, I went to the Italian National Convention in Rome with my husband, and I have to say it's slightly bonkers. But there were a couple of Americans there as well, and we ended up sort of sitting and talking to them. You know, this woman and and her husband, and are you Italian? Yeah, we'll talk about that after. And it was like the shares never ended, you know. The meetings never ended, you know. And we were sitting there with these translation headsets, and after sort of 2 hours, 2.5 hours, you were thinking, is this meeting ever going to end? And, you know, it was... Anyway, and... So we just got on really, you know, these people just really easy to talk to, these two Americans, and we came back to England, and, you know, and I was still thinking about a sponsor, and I kept thinking about this woman, and I thought, I'm going to ask her if she'll sponsor me, and I emailed her, and I said, you know, I know we only sort of met for a little while, and blah, 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 and I was just wondering, you know, that I don't have a sponsor, and I was just wondering if you would sponsor me, and I sort of left that as a draft for a couple of days, and then I sent it, and then I was terrified every time I looked at my emails, you know, is she going to come back and say no, or is she going to come back and say yes? And both of them seemed equally, you know, kind of anxiety-making. Anyway, she said yeah. And so that's been a really amazing thing, you know. This I've been through the steps a few times, and... you know, this woman's got a lot of experience. The amazing thing about it is that sponsors I've had before have been, you know, have worked a program, but they've had AA sponsors, you know, just because of the sort of time NA has been in this country. My sponsor's got an NA sponsor. She's 34 years clean, and her sponsor's got an NA sponsor. I mean, for me, that is really, really amazing, you know, and that amount of experience being passed down. And... and she, you know, she is very, very into sort of NA literature. We do a lot of stuff around, like, looking at NA literature and talking about NA literature. And she's also, that was the other thing, you know, she's got an NA sponsor. She's very into NA literature. She does H&I, you know, and they're all things that, you know, I'm kind of interested in and have been involved in myself. And so I started working the steps with her, and... and the amazing thing I think about this program is, you know, you don't just keep going well, no, that's not quite right. In some ways, you don't keep going over the same thing over and over again. You know, you work through the steps, but the funny thing is that you're right and you think, God, this is all new. And then you suddenly think, this is that same stuff, but I've just got a different kind of handle on it, you know. And this time, I was writing this step one, and I really, really understood how much, from a young child, I have felt that I need to look after, you know, I'm on my own. I need to look after myself. I can't rely on anyone else, you know. And the things I've written about that before in recovery, loads of times, I know about that. I can remember having a conversation with my parents when I was about 13 and thinking, I'm never going to tell anyone about how I feel again, you know, because of their reaction. And, you know, and then I was sort of using, and then I never did until I got into recovery. You know, it took me a long time in recovery. It was I would say it's my first 6 and 7 where I really started to be able to identify feelings that I had and be able to name them. That was, you know, a good couple of years into recovery. You know, I had a lot to learn when I got into recovery. And, so that was a revelation to me, you know, how sort of ingrained that was. You know, that, you know, say I'm at work and we're doing something and we're meant to be doing it as a group or a team or whatever. And then I think, you know, it starts getting difficult, and then I think they're not really pulling their weight. Oh, well, I, you know, and suddenly I'm taking on the whole responsibility for everything that's happening, you know, because I don't have that sort of faith, you know. I don't need to be struggling on my own. And so I worked, you know, I sort of worked a step two. What happened within all of this was that my sponsor got very ill and had a very sort of serious operation, you know, and we're talking by sort of Skype and phone and things like that. And then I sort of worked a step through, and I thought, you know, this time I really, really want to do something to really make a commitment to working step three. And I did a few, things. You know, in the middle of it all, bit of a sort of long story, but you know, my parents both died after long periods of quite serious illnesses, and my first step eight, my sponsor at that time said, you know, your amends to your parents maybe is just to get to know them as people, you know, because they were like this kind of archetype, you know, scary people almost, do you know what I mean? They treated me like a child, and they treated me like a child because I'd always behaved like a child, you know, bail me out, I've screwed up again, all that kind of stuff. And so my father was ill for 10 years and then he died, and I became very close to him before he died, and I was with him when he died. And you know, I was touched by what you said about your father. And that was a very powerful story. And and then my mother came to live with me, and she was ill for a long time, and she died at home when I was with her when she died. And anyway, she had a flat, and just recently, you know, our family needed to sell the flat, and I took responsibility for it, of course, and it was a very sort of difficult thing, and really, you know, it's caused me immense anxiety in all different ways, and it's taken sort of a year to, you know, give the tenant notice, and lots of different things happened, including just as it was about to be sold, the guy upstairs managed to empty a whole bath full of water down through the ceiling, so that all the wallpaper came off in the hall, and it was just stressful. And I really tried to deal with that by just doing the next right thing. And I really think that a lot of recovery is. For me, you know, I was a very anxious child, and I'm still quite an anxious sort of person, that sometimes all I can do is just, you know, the next right thing, hand over the results, the next right thing, hand over the results. And and one of the other things I did was I do a meeting on Friday morning in Friday mornings in Richmond, and a friend of mine goes there, and we were talking about going on a retreat together, and what I wanted was somewhere with like a weekend that wasn't too expensive, that would, you know, have some sort of meditation and stuff in that, as kind of a commitment to, you know, step three, handing stuff over. And and I found this Buddhist meditation weekend, and you know, I didn't really want to be a Buddhist or anything, but it was two meditations that I'd done before. I've got a friend who's a Buddhist, and she organises weekends for women in recovery, and we always do mindfulness of breathing and metta bhavana, loving kindness. And so I'd done those two meditations before, and me and my friend went on this weekend, and it was really, really fantastic. And in fact, I've meditated almost every morning since then, which I'm surprised about, because I'm really bad at, you know, that's why I feel this was the sort of thing that I should have done at like 30 days, you know, and then be sharing what a spiritual giant I am. You know, I'm 32 years clean. I've meditated on and off, but I've never done, you know, I've never really done it regularly. I've always prayed, but, you know. And the amazing thing was, you know, we were doing this, you know, we sort of got in there, and there were lots of people, and, you know, there were two sort of ordained Buddhists who were running the course, and one of them, you know, when we sat down, said, "The reading out of the AA meditation book this morning." We're like, really? And and one of the guys who was guiding this weekend, and you know, who's like a long-term Buddhist, I guess, does 12-step. He doesn't do NA. He does a 12-step program. But what it meant was, you know, that you could kind of talk about what was going on because really I see everything from a recovery context, because that's really all I've ever done. You know, I've gone to meetings, I've worked steps, I've done service, you know, that's really all I've done. So I kind of relate things back to that. It was really, really, you know, a fantastic experience. And and I've really found that I've been much, much calmer in the way that I deal with things. I just feel that probably everyone is sitting here going, "But I've been doing that for years." You know, I'm a bit, you know, I'm a bit sort of slow on this kind of stuff. But it's been really, really powerful. And, you know, the thing I love about NA is that, you know, when I got clean, I started working steps, and I got to step four, and I kind of thought, if I could just hold it together like this, everything's going to be fine, you know. But it was more, you know, if I can hold it together. I wasn't free in myself, you know. And my experience is that, you know, by staying around, I've done different things. I've worked steps. That each time I do, I find out new things, and there are new things that I want to do. And I always feel that, you know, there are new possibilities all the time. You know, I've had some difficult times in recovery. You know, it was very difficult looking after, you know, when my mother was very ill and I could only get to one meeting a week. It was really, that was a very, very difficult time for me. Friends looked after me, and having sponsees, you know, working steps with sponsees looked after me. You know, it's incredible, you know. And I'm thinking, I went through this thing with the flat, and thank God that is all over with. You know, that finished about 2 or 3 weeks ago, and I have still had a cold constantly since then. And you know, in a way, I think that's, I've sort of let go of everything, and now I've got a cold, and I just don't seem to be able to get rid of it. And I'm thinking about what I'm going to do this year. I might need to have an operation this year. I've been a bit, it's in my brain. When I found out about it, they needed to do this exploratory thing where they put a wire kind of in your groin that goes up into your brain, and they kind of take pictures. And the doctor told me that that's what they were going to do. And I walked out and I went downstairs. And I turned around and I walked back upstairs and I went, I am going to be knocked out to do this, aren't I? And he went, oh no, you can't be knocked out, you have to be conscious. And I was completely freaked out about that. Really didn't want to do it, put it off for about a year. And actually, it's an amazing experience. It really was an amazing experience, you know. The things these people can do are just stunning. I was in this room with this huge TV screen and this big thing that was going backwards and forwards, and, you know, radiologists and a doctor and a whole team of nurses. It was amazing. Anyway, now they've said, oh, yeah, well, because of that, we can do this operation. And then I've been reading about it, and it says, you know, and they knock you out for that, and then, you know, you have to go into intensive care for the day. And I'm just like, oh, I want to go and say, oh, no, can I do it awake? I don't want to, you know, it's ridiculous, isn't it? But actually, I was in a meeting today, and, you know, a guy was sharing about having had an operation and being given, you know, a narcotic drug, and saying, you know, and he said, you know, and as they gave it to him, he went, God, that's wonderful. And then he had the operation, and then he woke up, and he thought, God, I feel, you know, terrible. And, you know, and he found it very difficult, kind of, you know, in his head. And I can really understand that, you know. So there we are. So that's one of the things. And then when that's over, I want to go and stay in Rome and do like an intensive Italian course, because I was studying it a while ago, and then I got caught up at work and I haven't done it for a couple of years. But what I'm saying is, it doesn't matter what those things are, really. It's just that, you know, I didn't stop when I was, you know, like my mother used to say to me, oh, you know, in my day, once you were sort of 35, that was it. You know, you're just sort of a housewife and you just got on and you just did that. You know, recovery, I think, is about, you know, you have to be comfortable with yourself today. And so what that means is, you know, you have to kind of stay engaged, and you have to do what you do, you know, to feel comfortable today. And that means that, you know, really, you're constantly changing. And that's a really wonderful thing. You know, I think that's really the most amazing thing about recovery. Great. I don't know. to talk about now. So I feel very lucky. I feel very lucky about that and being in recovery. And what else? You know, I've done amazing things. You know, when I came into recovery, there was you know, I used to go to these meetings in Chelsea, you know, and at the time I was living in a council flat and I was being evicted. And that, when I look back at that, I think, how could I have been living in a council flat with a child not working and someone not paying my rent? You know, how could they have been evicting me for not having paid my rent? I could never really understand that, but they were very aggressive to me. And you know, I got called in to see the council and they said, I had an eviction notice and I went in and talked to them. And I started to argue it and the guy said to me, I wouldn't argue it if I were you because we know a lot more about you than you probably think. God, that was so shaming. It was the most horrible, horrible thing. And I went to this lunchtime meeting and I sort of shared that had happened. And this guy came up to me and said, I'll pay it off for you if you like. You know, I mean, I didn't. I paid it off over time. But the fact that someone would come up and say that to me, you know, the fact that someone was like, you're not a scumbag. You're not, you know, someone who kind of doesn't deserve anything. You know, it was such a wonderful thing for someone to say. And he was a fantastic guy, that guy. He died of Hep C. And where am I going with this? I used to go to these meetings and people would say, you know, I can remember one girl at the meeting and she used to come and say to me, I've got another parking ticket, you know, I was out shopping, I've got another parking ticket. And I used to think, Christ, you can run a car and you can afford to have parking tickets, you know. For me, that seemed, you know, that she was obviously as rich as anything, you know, because I couldn't even afford to live in my own flat, really. You know, I mean, really, we were seriously hand to mouth when I got clean. And, you know, and I've just stayed in recovery and I've gone to meetings and, you know, and I ended up, I got a job and that sort of worked out. And, you know, sorts, you know, my parents had taken me away, me and my son away in when I was using a couple of times to sort of help sort us out a bit. And generally what happened when they did that was I would find someone to go off with, you know, and then I'd be on holiday, I'd be sick, I'd be out in the evening with some guy that I'd sort of managed to come, you know, I mean, addicts always find addicts, don't they? You know, and I got into recovery and really it'd been years since I'd just been on a holiday, you know, not since I was a kid. And, you know, and I've done all sorts of things. You know, when I was 50, I went to India and did this just amazing trip, you know. All sorts, you know, there are so many things I've done in recovery. But the best thing is, you know, that sort of peace of mind. When I came into recovery, my head was, you know, just non-stop. And, you know, and that's calmed down unbelievably. Anyway, I'm very, very grateful to be in recovery. And thank you for asking me, Dean. And, you know, thanks for listening. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.